There were many dance halls back then, and no beer would be served in the dance halls, so this could bring families to attend.
Right, and, you know, people keep their drinking outside. The band always get a break, and, you know, just go outside and, come on, let's go out and have a drink. They'd go out at the break time. But that went on like that for years and years.
But it made for a good scene then in the dance.
Oh, yeah. You could bring your kids in, you know.
But that's also when the fight started.
Yeah, yeah. the loudmouth got to working on them.
Because they drink outside and then come inside.
Yeah, they come back in and dance. But when they go out to drink like that, if they've got a pint, they just turn it up and chug a lug. Then they come back in and...
Yeah, you don't nurse the drinks out there, do you?
No, I don't know if I put this in the book or not about the dance that me and Orrin Yace played for up in the Dog Creek Hills for the Indians. Alf Nace was a Cherokee Indian. He was a fiddle player. And Orrin said, well, me and Tommy will come up here and play. But he said, I don't want any fighting. If you start a fight, he said, we're going to leave. And so you've got to pass the hat before we start playing. So we go up 4 or 5 miles up the Dog Creek Hills, up there east to north of Claremore. We passed the hat. Boy, we did good. You know, just 25, 30 bucks in that hat. And we hadn't even took our instruments out of the cases. And they started the biggest fight. Both of, I can say Indians because I'm part Indian, you know. And it was Indians and cowboys and Indians.
Yeah.
And they were getting it on out in that front yard. And it was funny, you know. I mean, they wouldn't – I guess they did it to see who was the toughest instead of I'm going to kill you. They were just fighting to see who was the meanest. And Orrin said, come on, Tommy, let's get out of here. He had an A-model Ford, so we jumped in that little Ford and put our guitar and fiddle in the back and took off.
That was the easiest money you ever made, wasn't it?
It was. We didn't play a note.
When bands took a break, everyone headed for the door at the same time. And that's when a lot of fights started, just trying to get out to the booth.
Fighting to get a drink, not fighting for having a drink. Fighting to get a drink,
yeah.
We was playing down to Ianola one night. I was about 17 or 18. I was playing the fiddle that particular night, and this guy came up and said, let me see your fiddle, and just took my fiddle and just broke it over his knee. Had his knee sitting up on one bale. Hey, we was up in a hayloft playing, and I had a bass player named Roy Cluxton. Roy jumped off that bass and knocked that guy plumb across the dance floor. The guy was sorry he broke the fiddle, and he took off running. Of course, I went home and tell my dad. He said, you make any money? I said, no, but I got our fiddle tore up. We finally got it put back together, but that's when I figured I didn't need to play fiddle. Better stick with guitar.
Did you at that age, maybe earlier, decide, this is what I'm going to do for my life career?
Oh, yeah. Things were really happening. When I got out of high school, I played around here a little bit with Jimmy Hall, and then I went to work with Johnny Lee. Then, first of all, I went out to New Mexico with Art Davis, but it seemed like there was a lot of work if you was capable of playing. But you know what? You had to be sober. These band leaders, they wouldn't hire you if you drank. And you could very easily get a reputation because back then I asked about guys, well, you don't want him, he drinks too much. You know, that was the big thing. Don't hire him, he drinks too much. But I always had good jobs and had good bands. I had the best band at Lawton during the Hank Thompson heyday and Bob Wilson, Leon McCullough heyday. I had a band you put right up there with them. I mean, I furnished the musicians for 4 or 5 years, you know, right out of my band at Lawton. They'd come there. Paul McGee went from my band to Hank Thompson, Donnie McDaniels, Billy Dozier, Tommy Camfield. But we had great bands and always kind of liked that. Always figured if you had a good band, you could do what you want to do.
But here you were near Tulsa and the famous Canes Ballroom was right there. Do you remember the first time you ever played in Canes?
Yeah, I played there with Johnny Lee in 52, so I would have been 21.
Was that Johnny Lee Wills and all his boys?
All the boys, yeah.
All the boys. Mm-hmm. And you were one of the all the boys.
He had a lot of horns, too. And he had 3 fiddle players. He had Curly Lewis, Henry Boatman, and Cotton Thompson. Great band. Tommy Elliott played steel. Don Harlan played clarinet. He had Fred Beatty on sax. He had a good band.
You probably went to Canes before that just to watch the performers who would come through Tulsa.
I went to Canes when I was 16 years old. I'd go down there and hang on the front of that bandstand and watch them bands.
Who would you watch?
I saw Spade Cooley's band there. I saw Tex Williams, saw Tommy Duncan after he had left Bob. I saw Bob there many times. Saw Johnny Lee many times. Whoever was playing there.
And you thought, if only I could play on this stage.
I was determined that I was going to play on that stage. I told people, I said, I'm going to be up here one of these days. You know, I never dreamed at that time that was 48, 49. Buddy got killed in 58, and I went to California and started producing Bob's records just 12, 15 years later. I always dreamed about getting up there playing, but I never dreamed about being out there producing Bob Wills' records.
So that was your first introduction to Bob in California?
I met Bob in 1949 at Claremore. That's when I was 18 and had that old bus I'd got from McAuliffe. Bob had a brand new bus, and he was playing for the Will Rogers Day Parade and Dance there in Claremore, November the 4th in 1949. He had his bus in the parade, and he had his bus, and there was a band, and I had that old ragged-looking bus of mine coming right behind him, Tommy Alsop and the Range Riders. I had it loaded down with school kids, too. That's all screaming out the windows.
I would imagine Bob Wills, who was really popular, making lots of money, had a pretty nice bus at that time.
He had just bought one from an oil company, and that night we went to the dance, and I parked right beside him, went over there, and was talking to Lucky Moeller, his manager. At that time, Lucky owned the Trenton Ballroom in Oklahoma City, and he was managing and booking Bob. I said, I'd love to see that bus. And he said, well, come on in here and take a look at it. And Bob hadn't got off the bus yet. I said, I got that old bus over there from Leon McAuliffe. And Bob said, looks like one of my old buses. He said, I'll give them guys some buses, you know, furnished the buses back in the early 40s, Leon and Tommy Duncan and Johnny Lee. He said, I think it is because I've got pictures of it, and I got some pictures of some of his old buses. It looks like it. But he had just bought his, and Lucky Miller said, we just bought that bus last week from an oil company. He said, $16,800. I remember the price of it.
Wow.
And I said, see that sitting right there? $500. Yeah, it was a nice bus.
So you were introduced to Bob then, but when did he hear you play?
When I was playing with Johnny Lee, he came up here when Uncle John died and went out on some jobs with us.